Welcome to the Poet's Path at Pokagon State Park. This is Indiana's first Poet Laureate, Joyce Brinkman. First, let's locate the path. The Poet's Path begins at Trail 3, just off of the parking lot, northeast of the Pottawatomie Inn. When you walk the path, this program will help you view this fascinating environment with a poetic eye. But before we begin, here are some suggestions. Be prepared with paper and pen or some kind of recording device in order to make notes on the things you want to remember to use in the poems that the Poet's Path inspire. A small tablet will be sufficient for notes, but if you want to spend more time on the path writing, be sure to bring something with greater capacity. While the speed hiker can walk this path in half an hour, speed is not the aim here. The time on the path will vary depending on how many times you stop and for how long you stop along the way. You should plan on a minimum of 1 hour and walking approximately 1.5 miles. Now pause at the beginning of the trail to think about the land we are about to enter. This land was once owned by the Pokagon branch of the Pottawatomie tribe of pre-Columbian people. They were one of the many tribes that inhabited what is now the state of Indiana before the arrival of European settlers. They lived close to nature and respected it because they were aware of how much they depended on it, and the traditions they practice today continue to recognize the strong connection of people and the rest of creation. As poets, two important things we can learn from them are the importance of being aware of our surroundings and showing respect for all other forms of life. For poets, there is no more important ability than the ability to observe. And there's lots to observe in the diverse sections of the park that the Poet's Path traverses. The trail will quickly come to a T, and at the T you should turn right. But pause at this turn to notice the informational sign, which tells you not to pick any plants and not to get off the trail. As modern-day Americans, we seldom think about how we impact the non-human world. But we can change the environment of a wooded area by simply walking on it, and in so doing, transferring foreign seed, microbes, and such to the land from our shoes. This is also a good spot to look around and think about what's not only what lives here, but also what dies here. It's often easy to see what's most beautiful about a place, but it's important not to ignore what's not beautiful, because seeing both the light and the dark of a situation adds depth to poetry. In summer, it's easy to spot the dead wood that exists among the many green and growing things, but in any season you will see fallen trees and branches. In a poem, you might want to address the dead wood itself, or to use it as an image to address a different kind of dead wood, like former poet laureate Norbert Kraft does in his blues poem, Dead Wood Blues. A blues poem is a strongly rhythmic narrative form that presents a story using rhyme and repetition. Listen to Norbert's poem while you give some thought to the dead here among the living. Dead Wood Blues. Tell you why you ought to be singing the Dead Wood Blues. Know why you ought to be singing the Dead Wood Blues? So you don't let lichen and moths creep into your shoes. Don't you know a tree will send sap only to what lives? What ain't alive gets no sap from down below to live. No tree gonna up to dead wood good sap blood give. No big healthy Hoosier tree in sand can stand. No tree in our forest with dead wood can long stand. Cut out your dead and you grow strong and grand. We all got to take care of the top and the bottom. Say it, I promise to take care of my top and my bottom, or all of me gonna end up in Gorm and Sodom. A tree's branches won't grow if the sap won't rise. A soul's life is dead unless spiritual sap can rise. Cut out your dead, my friends, and be woods wise. When the trail presents you with the choice, make another right turn. You are now heading into the wetlands section of the path. In spring, this part of the trail will be filled with a variety of rapidly growing green plants, like skunk cabbage, and plants with colorful blooms, such as the common blue violet, the blue flag iris, and the yellow splatter duck. There will be plenty of sounds, too, as the male red-winged blackbirds perch on cattails and call furiously for mates. In the water, the male frogs also join the mating chorus. Both sight and sound are important elements in poetic observation. The more you can bring the reader or listener into the experience by providing provocative description of the things that stir their senses, the more likely they will enjoy and understand your poem. And don't forget the element of touch in your poem. Here's a poem of mine that celebrates what plants do. To the green things, atop the chain of food we rest, blessed to be unmatched in natural struggle. Yet talent have we not to share, compared to others' prodigy, containing recipes within their seeds, whose plans create life's food with golden rays descending from the sun. Without the swaying grass and leaves that keep the world ablaze with green, the earth would only offer hard, cold rock. Our link would not be in the chain. Every link would be the same. A living earth would be a phantom dream. I'm sure you heard the colors of green and golden. Did you think about your sense of touch with the words hard, cold, rock? To the Green Things is a free verse poem, which means it's a poem that doesn't require you to shape your poem in any particular way, like having a certain number of lines to write, counting syllables, or using a certain rhyme scheme. When you begin walking on the boardwalk portion of the path that takes you over the marshy area of the trail, listen to how sound changes once you step on the wood. Your footsteps on wood make a different sound than they do against the earth. As a poet, you always want to pay attention to sound. Sound is very important in poetry, and even in the quietness of a still day or the hush of the woods, there will be sound. Remember how the rhythm of the Deadwood Blues poem gave it a particular sound? Sound is important in this next poem because it is a sonnet with a 14-line rhyming scheme. Listen to Kettle Hole Lake by Dr. Joe Hightouse of DePaul University as you rest and observe from the bridge bench. Kettle Hole Lake, scar on your face below the eye, some gouge from years ago, two boys playing, knives with icicles. You took them from the gutters and fought like men, day graying into night so the freezing blood looked black. And now this mucked-up lake in summer, you're told, is just a scar left by a stack of snow turned ice, and through some blur of time and weather, a fragment wedges out the earth, the glacier melts away, and this is what's left, some cloudy eye of water in a drought, looking up into the sun. You miss your brother who put that frozen dagger in your cheek. It's hot, humid, the lake steams, the wind's weak. This poem, which captures the lake in summer, informs you how this lake came to be, but also takes you into a personal human moment. Using nature to show something about human experience has been used by poets for centuries. Were you able to hear the subtle rhymes throughout this 14-line sonnet? Did you hear the rhyme of some with from in the first and third lines of the first stanza, and plain, the middle N word, in line two of that stanza, with grain, the first N word, in the second stanza? These subtle lines continue in this pattern until the two-line last stanza called the envoy, which rhymes cheek and weak. There's activity for one to experience with the senses of touch in these two lines, but also to hear with the mention of wind. The volume varies, but on most days in any season, wind can be heard. Just listen for it as you watch it subtly move a blade or leaf. As you sit on the bridge, gather your thoughts around the sounds and sights of this piece of nature left to us by the glaciers of long ago, and think about how you might use this feature to contemplate and write a poem about what you might leave behind. If you plan to use the 14-line sonnet form, remember you will want to use subtle rhymes, and don't forget to record colors and sounds to use in your poem. After a short spell of note-taking, or first drafting, follow the boardwalk out of the lake area and into the woods. When you come to the sign for Trail 6, take a right turn onto it. Most of us either live in a city or in an agricultural area with open fields, and it may be hard to believe that once the majority of this state was covered with thick woods. Simon Pokagan, the son of the Potawatomi chief who sold the land in treaties and for whom this park is named, knew this land well. Here's a poem set in autumn written by Karen Kovacic, the third person to serve as Indiana's poet laureate. Karen's poem is in a Japanese form of poetry called the tanka. It requires the poet to write based on syllable count. Listen as she shares with us something about what Simon Pokagan experienced in this land with her poem, Tanka in Amber, with her lines containing the following number of syllables in each line, 5, 7, 5, 7, 7. Tanka in Amber. Simon Pokagan would breathe in pine, lake, and moss, the mallard shore's scents. In fall, when boughs shed needles, ooze resin in the gray light. It's usually easy for most of us to imagine the bright colors of fall, but do we always remember the smells? Scent has been important in the world of the Potawatomi. Before the use of electrical lighting, sight was limited for much of many days, and smell helped you identify things, told you where you were. Here are some parts of a poem by Indiana's fourth poet laureate, George Calamaris. George teaches at IU Purdue in Fort Wayne. He's a great lover of one of our favorite domesticated animals, the dog. You certainly may encounter a dog with its master on the path, and you can get a sense of George's great descriptive language in this excerpt from Wet Dog. Wet Dog, Pokagon State Park, Angola, Indiana. The day was dark, the air smelled like wet dog. Owls left bits of mice bone cracked in the overnight damp. My beagle hound had blue Arkansas ticking on her tail, red on all four paws from her daddy's daddy, all her bloodlines long, all the way up the Mississippi. This poem gives you color to help you see what makes this breed of dog unique, and the sound of cracked bones with a touch of the damp. But the strongest element is the sense of smell. Here's another excerpt that I find particularly pleasing, even though the smells mentioned aren't ones we find pleasant. They work beautifully, though, because George has presented them so vividly and with a sense of music. This is an example of how the sound of poetry makes the normally unpleasant beautiful. To give oneself up wholly to the earth, to the scent and turn of worm castings, the milky manure of last night's moon. Gather as many sounds as you can as you travel this path, and write a short poem that will help us know where we are, even though we can't see the place. Or try to make some unpleasant smell pleasing by the way you handle it. If you've been moving at a steady pace for about 20 minutes, by now you've come to the steepest part of the path. Both of the trails in the poet's path are rated as moderately difficult. I've walked this path in every season, and I qualify for the senior plate at the cafeteria. The whole path can be done with a moderate amount of huffing and puffing, but if you need a smooth, level surface, now is the time to turn around and go back to where you began. For those going forward, please wait while those returning receive these instructions. Stop again at the bench on the bridge and write a quatrain, which is a four-line poem that focuses on one living thing you saw or heard during the walk. If you came with a group, try working together to write a collaborative poem where each of you writes the quatrain. Pick numbers to determine the order and let each person choose a word from the quatrain before theirs to use in his or her quatrain, and everyone write about a different aspect of the hike. For those going forward, in most seasons you will see Lake Charles on your right. Even in the summer you may catch a glimpse of it through the trees. Sit on the bench on one of the high points to view and listen to my poem, Park Psalm. Park Psalm, in tribute to Richard Lieber on the 100th anniversary of the Indiana State Parks. 888,000 come to breathe the air, to sojourn where they hear the songs of birds and frogs, the choral chants of hidden bugs. The killdeer along a spreading stream, the Carolina wren so seldom seen, eagle, crow, hawk, and dove, deer that drink from a sheltered cove, the banjo twang of small green frogs, the crickets chirp from rotten logs that fall from oak and sycamore that feed the life on forest floors. 888,000 come to breathe the air, to sojourn where they hear the songs of birds and frogs, the choral chants of hidden bugs. The prairie path, the canyon deep, the gushing, rushing waterfall. A German found a way to save these things for all. Could Richard Lieber ever dream his life like the Wabash River's flow would tumble through this land we know and leave a widening mark? Could he have guessed as he embarked how far his dream would go? 888,000 come to breathe the air, to sojourn where they hear the songs of birds and frogs, the choral chants of hidden bugs. Hoosiers are rightfully proud of our Indiana State Parks. As you enjoy resting, remember whose home this is, and write about something that lives here. The deer, raccoons, rabbits, squirrels, beavers, muskrats, chipmunks, mice, fish and frogs, birds and insects that seek shelter and food from this land and water. Don't forget the plants that feed them and provide an endless color palette to enliven your poems. Could you smell the rotten logs in Park Psalm? Hear the crickets chirp? The frog's banjo twang, or the sound of water at a waterfall? What about the sound of the poem itself? Did it have a rhythm? This poem has a refrain that appears at the beginning, middle, and end of the poem. Try writing a poem about your experience on the path and include a refrain. Winter is one of the prettiest times at Pokagon State Park. It doesn't present the variety of wildlife sounds like the frantic buzz of spring's mating season, with the abundant calls and chirps of bluebirds as they search for nesting holes in hollow trees, the peewee, or, if you're lucky, the rail. It doesn't offer the warmth of long spans of sun's bright rays or the small but frantic activity of the insect world with spider webs and orbs, bees, butterflies, beetles, and swarms of gnats and mosquitoes hovering over the steamy, wet depressions in the earth like summer does. It can't provide the spectacular variety of colors of fall, but in its own quiet way it stirs the sentences. After leaving the hill bench and the series of hills, you will dip into the lower part of the woods, where in summer the gnats and mosquitoes swarm. In early winter, when snow hasn't covered the area completely, with the trees bare, you can see how much water comes to rest off the hills into this area. While water doesn't live in this area, called a fen, it is a life force. We know no life without water, and the winter wildlife depend on it. Take time to record some thoughts about water for a poem you can write later. Even on the snowiest days, you can expect to observe wildlife on the path, a muskrat chomping on dried reeds in an ice-free zone of the lake, maybe a quick dash of deer as they dart through the woods, or like my experience with a wild turkey that I've recorded with my Wild Turkey in Winter poem. Wild Turkey in Winter on the Poet's Path at Pokagon State Park. When winter frosts the woods like a coconut cream cake, the day grows sweet. Instead of being numbed by snow's arctic ambiance, the thought of tasting snow ice cream tingles the tongue. Two eyes sharpened to see through a steady flow of flakes in air that marches into the lungs as if in full military garb. Then a platoon of black feathered wild turkey march down the now white path, turning off the trail, determined to bivouac among shagbark hickory and tall red oak, their cadence in perfect time with a precisely pitched gobbling command, calling forth a separate parade of perfect posture on the return to the lodge and thoughts of comfort in the company of others. This poem contains a sense we haven't talked about yet. With a coconut cake, we get the taste of sweet, and later in the poem, there's a taste of the cold delight of snow ice cream. Have you ever tasted shagbark hickory syrup? What other tastes can you think of that can be found in the woods? If it's winter and it's snowing, stick out your tongue and catch a snowflake. Record the sensations you feel when you are back in the inn by the fire, and write a tanka about this taste of snow, or combine it with a childhood experience that took place in the snow, comparing the experiences in a longer poem. Make your longer poem an ode to snow, or envision its death on your tongue in a poem celebrating someone who's died, which is called an elegy. Before you leave Trail 6 and rejoin Trail 3 by turning left, stop and first look down. Even in winter, you may see some green patches if snow isn't too deep. Moss can stay green even under snow, and look for turkey tail fungus close to the ground. Looking to the ground can also alert you to which animals may be in the area. An early morning walk before your fellow humans take the path may reveal the prints of deer, wild turkey, or rabbits, even a beaver tail print. There's a poem of mine called Tracks, from a series of poems about a young Native American and his grandfather. I'll read it for you here. It's called Grandfather Words. Tracks. See the tracks in the snow, little one? Do you know the mark of the doe? Why do I need to know this, grandfather? We each make our mark on the path. It's important to know who you follow. Before you move on, look up as well. High above the path, it's stunning to see how life reaches so far skyward toward the sun. When your eyes follow the trunk of a woodland tree, you may find another life there too, like a bald-faced hornet's nest. In winter, you can see easily multiple squirrel nests and often quietly sunbathing on the highest branches a blue jay, red-headed woodpecker, or a silent songbird. When you reach the place where earlier you turned on to Trail 6, you will continue straight and head back into the wetland portion of the trail. One of the outstanding features of this area are the tamaracks, which is Algonquin for wood used for snowshoes. These trees, which have needle-like leaves that are golden color in fall, are the only ones of their kind in Indiana. They live on the very edge of their existing habitat. They are under stress but continue to hang on. Contemplate how an individual might react to living on the edge of their environment. Use the trees as an image to write a poem exploring how living on a marginal area might make life different. As you approach the end of the path, let's review some of the images and how they appeal to the poem's audience. The high crambush Highbush cranberry brings to mind both color and taste, with their greens of spring and summer, and their red berries even kissed with winter snow. Frogs and birds are spring's greatest examples of sound, and winter's sound levels contain both a sense of silence and the whisper and the howl of wind. You surely saw some large rocks on your journey, which maybe made you think about the cold of the glaciers that shoved and discarded them on their journey to and from the state some 10,000 or so years ago. Besides fall's great colors of maple and oak leaves, there's also the smell of leaf mold as the leaves decay and return to feed the soil. Poems that stir the senses reach people with words that hold meaning for their lives and fill all your poems with both light and dark in the most musical of ways. Before leaving the path, think about how those who've been here before as you listen to Indiana's fifth poet laureate, Sherry Wagner's poem about Simon Pokagan. Sherry excels at this type of poem, which is called a persona poem, because the poet takes the character and speaks in the voice of the person featured in the poem. Here's Simon Pokagan and the Farmer, which first appeared in Sherry's book, The Harmonists at Nightfall, Poems of Indiana, published by Bottom Dog Press. Simon Pokagan and the Farmer. In the 1870s, a well-educated Indian came to Lake County about twice each year to visit the graves of his ancestors. Kankakee Valley Historical Society. From the way he squinted, I knew that farmer had no iota of what to make of me, a savage in a tailored suit who quoted Shakespeare and Tecumseh, spoke Potawatomi and Greek. Near juniper I prayed, for those who cradled me, I spoke to steady their steps down slick ravines. I sang that their days might be pleasant among heaven's herds of buffalo and elk. One April I found the mounded graves plowed under, shin bones stacked with field stones. I could have splashed the kerosene of a curse, but instead turned to offer my grief, a treeless prairie without periphery. Those bones could be mine or his. My tribe's revered flower, the trailing artibus, belongs to all who observe its delicate white blossoms on bended knee. As my gaze caught his, the farmer could only clear his throat as if pushing away dried leaves. If this encounter has produced a poem you want to share, you can submit it for possible publication to the Tipton Poetry Journal at tiptonpoetryjournal.submittable.com. And mention it is a Poet's Path poem. Enjoy your writing, and thanks for sharing this Poet's Path experience. Creation of the Poet's Path was made possible thanks to an Arts and the Parks grant that is supported by the Indiana Arts Commission, the Indiana Department of Natural Resources, and the Indiana Bicentennial Commission.